It's May 30th, 2018, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. First, we're going to hear about the Polynesian Voyaging Society's Education Incubator from Miki Tomita.
Okay, and then we'll explore how Hawaii can transcend oil, a strategy outlined in a new report from the Elemental Accelerator. Don Lippert joins us after the break.
First up, though, let's welcome Miki Tomita. I misspoke earlier. She is here to tell us about the Education Incubator. Miki is the Education Director for the Polynesian Voyaging Society and the Voyages of Hokulea, but also the Program Director for Education Incubator's Moonshot Laboratory Hawaii. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And don't worry about it. So many jobs, so many titles,
absolutely.
So many programs.
Yeah, I can never really keep track. Like, are you this or that?
That's my goal. The strategy is have so many titles that nobody knows what to call you. So then they don't call you.
That's also a possibility.
Okay, Miki, thanks for joining us. Let's see. So you, we can go back on a couple of years and we've seen the sort of the genesis of the whole Moonshot Laboratory. But now you actually have a summer program that teachers can participate in, or is it more than just teachers?
We do. So the opportunity that we have this summer, we're prototyping a second version of our launch pad. So the launch pad is given that name because it's meant to be the platform from which student ideas can launch. And in order for students to launch their ideas, we must have teachers and schools and other students on board with the skills to build a culture of innovation in the classroom and for the school level. So the Launchpad is meant as a professional development, but mm-hmm. it's also an opportunity for kids and their teachers to run through hacks of the school day, of the school curriculum, of the school system, and develop pitches and design sprints around that. And so our Launchpad really is about teaching the culture of innovation, rapid prototyping, design thinking, but working to improve the school a little bit or a lot. And that happens this summer. We also have a couple of other programs that fall into more place-based and purpose learning. And then we have some programs at the Discovery Center as well for kids.
And this is something you've been working on for some time. We've been really enjoying following the evolution. I think the last time you were on the show, maybe a couple of years ago, was when the Moonshot Laboratory was an up-and-coming program, mm-hmm. an idea.
Yeah, it was. Thank you for having us at the very early stages when we were socializing the idea and we were doing these like one day moonshot thinking sprints and really thinking about how to bring that type of innovation into the classroom and explaining the differences between a 10% increase to a 10 times increase in efficiency, in productivity, and innovation in the schools. So it has come a long way. We have a fully funded prototype, 1 year under our belt, heading into year two. We have a couple of student prototypes that are entering into the business startup phase. Hmm. And we have some of them are continuing on with us and working to see if they can align their college years with the type of plans that we want to have for them to continue their work as an innovation cohort to solve community problems in the environment and culture and economy.
So we saw the initial discussion that you had on the show. We didn't see too much of what happened in between. And then we saw sort of the demo day mm-hmm. of all the student teams and what they produced. Can you give us a little sense as to what happened between the start of the ideation and then the actual demo day?
Well,
a lot of hard work.
Yeah. I mean,
was it a whole program?
It was.
It curriculum.
It was about. There were about 6 months worth of working with individual schools. We ran like multiple prototypes within the prototype. So mm-hmm. really, trying to meet each school where they are to understand what are the needs that they see in their community in order to really start embedding innovation and entrepreneurship into their curriculum, worked with community organizations and advocacy groups to see what are the problems in the community that schools could be turned towards mm-hmm. to help solve. And then also a lot of time spent with kids through our purpose learning curriculum pieces around what is it that's in your heart and what drives you to help make the world a better place and what do you see as the strengths in your community. So all of that kind of came together and we could not have predicted and wouldn't want to have predicted what the students would produce. So by the time you saw them at demo day, mm-hmm. that was months of ideation, of customer discovery, of market research, of prototyping, figuring out that our machines are far too small for the ideas that they have. And so we had to find industry partners that could help us. Mm-hmm. People like Oceanet, people like Elemental, people like Sultan Ventures that were willing to help us really think about how do we expand outside of even our most innovative space that Kamehameha Schools allowed us to work out of? Mm. All of that happened in the year.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive progress. So tell us about this upcoming program cycle, the launch pad coming up in June, just a week away.
It is. It's this one is a short sprint. So we're doing 3 days of culture of innovation work and really how to break the mindset that we usually take into classrooms. And then we introduce kids into the mix and ask them to help push the teachers even further to think about what are the true things in the school that we think need help. Things that can be fixed from the classroom to the school level. So that one is the launch pad. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, like you said. It's a PDE 3 course offering as well, so teachers can get continuing education credits. And then at the end of that, we have a couple weeks off, and then we have a program at the Discovery Center. They asked us to run a program for 9 through 12-year-olds on place-based innovation. So we're doing like Hawaiian Moon Calendar and recycled planter boxes and aquaponics system, desktop aquaponics. So different kinds of maker ideas that come out of recycled products, and they're meant for the littler kids to do design engineering problems.
So is the launch pad event that the workshops that the teachers go through, is that sort of a preparation for them to now implement a curriculum over the next year and actually result in another sort of demo day 1 year from now?
It can be. So for the PDE 3 credits, as you know or might be familiar, the teachers have to generate a portfolio of the way that they implement the learnings in their classrooms mm-hmm. throughout the year and then have a demonstration. And so for some, they might create a pitch fest at their own school that they've helped to support students through. Others might be coming into our lab to support us during open lab time, which is when we have open hours for any school to come in through a membership model. And so there's a lot of different ways that they can actualize the requests that are put into the portfolio. Some of the teachers are in fact part of our prototype schools, the ones that are involved in our core program throughout the year. So they will be there with us every week throughout the school year, implementing that program with us side by side. Mm-hmm. About a third of the teachers usually come from that program.
Okay. So you said this event includes both teachers and students. Mm-hmm. How do they get involved? How do they find more information?
So you can visit us at our website, www.eduincubator.org. We're on Twitter and Facebook as EduIncubator. And all the information is there, as well as signing up for our newsletter and our upcoming events and our year in review. All of that information can be found on our social media platform and our website.
Very good. Fantastic. We'll put that up on our show notes later on tonight. And, of course, I want to thank you, Mickey, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, we'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Dawn Lippert from Elemental Accelerator. She's going to talk about transcending oil. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting, Sacred Hearts Academy, and Urgent Care Hawaii.
I listen to the news every single morning. Pretty much that's my way of getting the news. I also listen to the news at night. It's usually BBC Africa, but that's what I listen to. Pretty much I don't change the dial very much, and I probably shouldn't admit to that, but my station is HPR.
Member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. Now joining us is Dawn Lippert. Dawn, of course, oversees the strategic direction of the organization and execution of its mission.
And that organization is the Elemental Accelerator. She also serves as the Director of Innovation and Community at Emerson Elemental, the platform of Emerson Collective, committed to strengthening the relationship between humanity and nature through scalable, equitable, and innovative solutions.
That is really great. And of course, what did Transcending Oil tell us, and how can we make a difference now with the report published?
Welcome Absolutely. To the show. Thank you for having me. And it's really fun to follow Mickey Tomita, who's one of our partners and someone we've been working closely with on this idea of place-based innovation, mm-hmm. which is to us what that means is how do you really understand what's happening in your place and then bring in innovation that can solve those problems in the system, which is really what Elemental Accelerator is about.
Well, you know, maybe we ought to back up a little bit because we had you on maybe about a little more than a month ago, and we were talking about the Energy Summit, which Elemental was very much a part of. In fact, I think you guys were the primary motivators behind the whole summit. And really, it was kind of a convening of the entire sort of energy ecosystem here. And one of the outputs and I guess information that you wanted to convey was the result of this report of how Hawaii can really move the bar on transcending oil. So how did, I mean, how, can you give us a real snapshot on what you felt the Energy Summit was able to accomplish, and then how do you transition into now trying to fulfill the goals of transcending oil?
Sure. So it was the Earth Day Energy Summit, and it brought together some of the real like leading thinkers here locally, which include our electric utility, mm-hmm. Polynesian Voyaging Society. We had Mickey there, and Nainoa Thompson, and many of our entrepreneurs and startups here locally. And then also a number of voices from across the mainland or across the world who are doing some really interesting things that we can also learn from and collaborate with. I know one that you know and that we're really excited to have here is Joey Ito, mm-hmm. who's the director of the MIT Media Lab and really sort of a futurist in terms of thinking about how do you think about place and innovation and just really think outside the box. They have people in the MIT Media Lab who are growing buildings and a food computer and all kinds of new ideas like that that I think can be really applicable and helpful here in mm-hmm, Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So what we were trying to do with the Energy Summit was bring together not only sort of the typical energy voices, but those different innovation and cultural voices that are so critical to our overall transformation and bring those folks together. The other key thing about the Energy Summit was I think sometimes people think that, oh, well, transcending oil or ending oil, that's the pun here in Hawaii, is really all about just a few players or a couple solar companies or just the electric utility. But really, it's about all of us and everyone working together. And it's not just about electricity. It's also about transportation and mobility and how we move around and making sure that everyone in our community has access to those choices. So that was really the message of the Energy Summit.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the report itself, how it came to be? Now, the Energy Summit was the debut of this report, and we certainly hear from policymakers or at the highest level that obviously we want to be less dependent on oil, but in many ways it seems very abstract, and it seems like one of the objectives was to make it more practical.
Sure. So Elemental Accelerator, our mission is to attract startups from Hawaii and sort of nurture those startups locally and then from around the world who can help solve these energy challenges and agriculture and water and mobility right here. And one of the things that is really important as we do that is to ensure that people have access to data and know where we're going as a community and what's possible. And so we commissioned this independent report from a group called Rhodium Group and a group called Smart Growth America on the mobility side to really just take a look at the numbers and refresh the data. When the original Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative was signed in 2008 by the U.S. Department of Energy and the state of Hawaii, the world just looked really different than it does today. Mm-hmm. So we had, there wasn't really even an electric vehicle that you could buy on the market. Solar was about 2 or 3 times more expensive. So the market has just changed really significantly. We didn't have any like batteries or energy storage on the grid here in Hawaii. That's changed dramatically. So what does all these new numbers and look like for our state? And so that's what we were asked. We were asking those questions in this report and trying to make that data open and available to people across our community so they would have the ability to make really good informed decisions about policy and path forward.
I think one high-level question to start with is, are we being realistic? Is it mm-hmm. plausible to achieve some of these very ambitious goals to limit our dependence on oil, to transcend oil, or is it just, you know, over-promising and big sky talk and not something that is achievable?
It's absolutely achievable, and there's lots of things that need to happen on the ground to make this possible. I think there's a few key findings from the report that we thought were important. One was that the faster that we actually make this transition, the more jobs we create earlier. So the independent report found that we can create as many as 3,500 additional jobs by bringing this transition earlier, because there's more clean energy jobs available than fossil fuel jobs. And in general, these jobs pay about $3 to $7 more than the median wage, about $20 here in Hawaii. So they're good jobs. They're relatively well-paying jobs and give people economic opportunity. So that's really critical. Another thing that we found is that you can actually save money, because depending on what you think the price of oil will be in the future, you can actually save up to about $7 billion by bringing this transition earlier. And this is totally in line with what other sort of plans and things in Hawaii have found, but it's been helpful, I think, to quantify some of those savings and what that could look like. And then depending, again, on the price of oil, we can probably get between 58 to 84% of our energy from clean energy resources by 2030. So that's quite a bit faster than the current law calls for. Mm. But it looks like that can be economic. And again, it depends on the price of oil. But it's a lower risk strategy because it basically gives us a really certain sense of what the price of energy would be going forward.
You know, so Don, you know, we've had you on. We probably talked to some of the companies that you've had go through the cohort. In fact, I think Smart Yields probably went through Elemental,
yes,
right? Back when they were energy. Anyway, so what I'm getting at is the fact that it's really notable that you have helped to commission this report. But this is much bigger than just Elemental Accelerator, right? Because, I mean, Elemental is primarily in the startup mentoring business. How do you get all the rest of the ecosystem to align with what this report is saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the startup mentoring and startup funding business. I mean, what we want to do is, again, attract some of the best talent into this space mm-hmm. to help solve these challenges. So this is really a community effort, right? I think that everyone has different role to play. And like Mickey said, we're very much, we're very similar to Education Incubator in that we're constantly prototyping things and trying new things. And so for us, there's been a sense over the last couple of years that we're sort of lacking some of this quantitative data to know where we might be going. And so we saw that as a gap that we could step in and help fill. Mm-hmm. And we actually see this as really important for being able to attract startups to our space because they have to understand, like, what does the landscape look like? What does the market look like? What are policymakers going to do? Policy and innovation go totally hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You can't actually separate them, especially in these industries like energy or water or transportation mobility. The public and private sector have to be totally in sync. So that's why this is sort of, you know, run an experiment to basically say, okay, if we can help by commissioning independent report, can that help support our policymakers, which in turn supports the innovation community? So we take a pretty holistic view to systems change and what's possible.
Have you had any early feedback from some of these other stakeholders as to the insights and opportunities and specifically strategic steps that are outlined in the report?
Yeah, so the report actually was developed with all of these stakeholders. Mm-hmm. So it's through over 200 hours of interviews and large group stakeholder meetings with both the mobility community and people in sort of the energy and electricity community. So this isn't something that someone came in from, you know, outside and said, we think this is possible. I mean, this was really something that was developed from interviews and from work directly in the community. It's just basically an idea of synthesizing that and putting some numbers and some quantitative analysis around it. So, you know, I'm really sort of excited to see where this can go. And I think, you know, we're pretty open-handed in trying to provide this kind of information to people so that we can move forward together as a community.
Well, one of the areas that we've been promoting and advocating for, I guess, as long as we've been doing the show is the idea of open data. And I'm kind of curious to hear how you and Elemental and this report is approaching open data, because we are often presented with some of these objectives, whether it's the 80-80 from HTDC or Governor talks about doubling food production by 2020 or even with the clean energy. A lot of these objectives have numbers associated with the goal. But how do we track how we're actually meeting the objectives to get to that goal, right? And so when this report comes out and it actually says that it wants to create an open data environment, and that to me, that's great. So how do we take that next step to achieving that open data environment? We've been able to pass some legislation. We've got an open data law that's on the books, not only with the state of Hawaii, but with the city and county of Honolulu. How will you now take it to that next level?
Well, that's a great question. And obviously, reports don't change things, but people acting on information like that does. And I think the open data question is actually one for our whole community to wrestle with. We're taking a couple of different tacks around mm-hmm. it. One is that we brought in the former chief technology officer of the United States under President Barack Obama named Megan Smith. And she, right before the Earth Day Energy Summit, worked with the city and county to sort of lead a workshop and some thinking around open data. Mm-hmm. There are some people doing really interesting work across the 100 resilient cities that Josh Dambro and City and County of Honolulu are working with that are thinking really interesting new ways about how to create open data. We see this as a key issue also for startups. I see in some ways, I think data is a currency of competitiveness.
Absolutely.
And that some of these jurisdictions that have done a really good job with either utility data, water data, transportation mobility data, some of the work the city and county has done that led to a transportation hackathon a couple of years ago, is actually really critical in attracting talent from outside to solve challenges here in Hawaii, and also really important for our students and university students and young entrepreneurs and young innovators to start tackling these kinds of problems. Because where there's more data, there's much more appetite for innovators to come in and attack those problems.
Absolutely.
Right. So maybe we'll have another show and talk about, you know, the actual tactical objectives to implement an open data program. Want to hold that thought? We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Don Lippert about transcending oil. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Chaminade University, Inter Island Solar Supply, and Hastings and Pleadwell, a communication company.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and we're talking to Don Lippert, CEO of Elemental Accelerator, about the Energy Summit and the report, Transcending Oil.
And of course, right before the break, we were talking about some of the things that were in the report. Obviously, we have a very keen interest in open data and creating an environment for making more data available. But Don, you have your sort of focus on your next cohort, you have, startups that you want to mentor. I mean, how do you see, and I think you're about to announce the next sort of cohort, right? I mean, how do you align those companies with maybe objectives of the plan?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. So part of the reason that we commissioned this is just to inform our own selection of cohort companies and what we're going to be doing through funding innovation. Each year, we fund over $6 million of companies, mm-hmm. And usually select about between 12 and this year it'll be potentially up to 20 companies in our cohort to fund. And they're companies at all kinds of stage of their startup life. Some of them are just two people and a working prototype, and others of them are much larger companies. So one of the things we found in the report is that the opportunity for carbon for climate mitigation and reducing carbon emissions is greatest in transportation. And we're already doing enormous things on the electricity side, but on transportation, the challenges are much more difficult. So we've been specifically recruiting companies that have really interesting solutions in mobility, whether it's around, again, sort of this data question and making data more available to people, whether it's sort of around carpooling or creating new data. I mean, there's a lot of different things going on in the mobility space that are informed by some of the things that we learned coming out of this report. Mm-hmm. But again, from the carbon perspective, this is really critical, because if we do nothing, we're going to be driving 17% more than we do today. And only 10% of our cars could be electric by 2045. We're totally aligned here with others in our community around the electrification of transportation is a really key driver to decarbonization. And so transportation and mobility are absolutely critical to making that happen.
Now, certainly there is no such thing as low-hanging fruit with such ambitious, wide-ranging plans, but you talk about transportation, mobility, certainly transparency and data to support innovation. What are some of the other, short-term isn't even the right word, but what do you hope to see as one of the first indicators of success on this path?
Well, I think we're already there. I mean, we're making huge progress. Hawaii has itself... Our state has decarbonized faster than almost any jurisdiction in the world over the last 10 years. We're doing enormous things and making enormous progress here. So I would love to see us continue down that road and even be sort of more thoughtful and aggressive in some of the things that we're doing to incorporate innovation and new ideas. I mean, one example that we have here in Hawaii is our first flywheel installation that was an Elemental Accelerator project that we commissioned commissioned a couple of months ago in combination with Hawaiian Electric. And the idea is it's basically a spinning disc of metal, and it operates very similar to a chemical battery, but is completely recyclable at the end of its life and has essentially no degradation over the course of its life. It's not chemicals, and it doesn't use any of the rare earth metals that we see in batteries. So, you know, really thinking about innovation, not only in terms of like what is actually needed right now, but how does this make a difference in the whole life cycle of something?
So, Don, you know, amongst our little club here, I mean, we kind of all get it. But how do we spread this understanding across the entire community and sort of motivate others to consider electric vehicles or ways that they can perhaps contribute to this sort of clean energy vision of the future? I mean, so I guess what I'm getting at is, how do you spread the word?
Yeah, well, I think ultimately it's partly about creating a clean energy vision, but it's really mostly about creating a sustainable economy here. Mm-hmm. And so energy is one of the economic sectors where there's huge opportunity to create jobs, good jobs, well-paying jobs that can bring kids home and that people actually want to work in. So I think that's really the essence of it. I mean, right now there's 16,000 clean energy jobs across the state. We're seeing thousands more potentially come in as we make this transformation. So I think ultimately that's what it's about. One of our projects, for example, as an agriculture project, Terra Viva on the North Shore. And by working with a nursery up there, they're able to actually revitalize the nursery and the sort of small agricultural ecosystem there on the North Shore when we're seeing, you know, declines in other agricultural production. So it's not just about people who have MBAs or like, you know, advanced degrees or sort of like fancy education being able to come start these companies. It's actually about being able to revitalize our ag sector, be able to create mobility jobs, even as we go sort of toward an autonomous future. What would that look like? Do we have people here who can participate in that? And in clean energy, are we actually having people locally that can create and implement these technologies?
Is there a part in this report that would support or help or inform or inspire an individual, an average everyday citizen to be a small part of this movement?
I hope so. And there are lots of ways to get involved. Our program itself, we fund over a dozen interns every year in both our accelerator and also within our companies and startup companies. And one of the things we think is most important is to give people direct pathways into careers in this space, because it can be a little bit intimidating to kind of come into clean energy or just sort of like as a technical field. But there's lots of jobs in marketing and project management, you know, lots of electricians and trades and others. And all of those are really critical to actually building the clean energy economy.
Do you see legislation being required to help move the bar on this?
Absolutely. I think that it's always a portfolio of solutions, right? So I think legislation's a piece of it, both at the state level, but then also there's a lot of work that the counties are doing around, you know, building codes and some of the other things that are in the county purview that have been really important. And we've seen amazing leadership at the county level, really across all four counties in clean energy. So it's a mix of policymakers, private sector, entrepreneurs, students, and you know, all of us kind of working together.
If somebody wanted to digest and download and print out, but no, that would be environmentally bad, read this report on their digital device, how could they get their hands on it?
Sure. It's on transcendingoil.com. And
oh,
we created a visualization there so people can kind of scroll through it.
And of course, when can we hear about your next cohort?
Very soon, in August. So you can find out if you sign up at elementalaccelerator.com for our emails, or follow us on Twitter at elementalaccel.
Very good. Don Lippert is the CEO of Elemental Accelerator, and we want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll meet some of the members of the latest 10th cohort of the Blue Startups Tech Accelerator program.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. If you have any comments or suggestions, feel free to email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at @bitemarks.
And you can follow me at @Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Wednesday or anytime via the HPR app.
And of course, you be awesome. And we will see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.
If I could, I'd strike them in the head. This you ain't